All right, let's go in our Bibles to Proverbs chapter 4. I'm going to go ahead and read the whole chapter, and then we'll dive into things here this morning. Proverbs chapter 4. The Bible says, "Hear, O sons, a father's instruction. Be attentive that you may gain insight. For I give you good precepts. Do not forsake my teaching. When I was a son with my father, tender, the only one in the sight of my mother, he taught me and said to me, 'Let your heart hold fast my words. Keep my commandments and live. Get wisdom. Get insight. Do not forget and do not turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her and she will keep you. Love her and she will guard you.' The beginning of wisdom is this: get wisdom, and whatever you get insight. Prize her highly, and she will exalt you. She will honor you if you embrace her. She will place on your head a graceful garland. She will bestow on you a beautiful crown. Hear, my son, and accept my words, that the years of your life may be many. I have taught you the way of wisdom. I have led you in the paths of uprightness. When you walk, your step will not be hampered, and if you run, you will not stumble. Keep hold of instruction. Do not let go. Guard her, for she is your life. Do not enter the path of the wicked, and do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Do not go on it. Turn away from it and pass on. For they cannot sleep unless they have done wrong. They are robbed of sleep unless they've made someone stumble. For they eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. But the path of the righteous is like the light of dawn, which shines brighter and brighter until full day. The way of the wicked is like deep darkness. They do not know over what they stumble. My son, be attentive to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Let them not escape from your sight. Keep them within your heart. For they are life to those who find them and healing to all their flesh. Keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. Put away from you crooked speech and put devious talk far from you. Let your eyes look directly forward and your gaze be straight before you. Ponder the path of your feet, then all your ways will be sure. Do not swerve to the right or to the left. Turn your foot away from evil." The title of our message this morning is Fixing Our Desire. As we were down in Florida this past week, last Saturday, just a week ago yesterday, we were down at the beach. We were on the coast, on the Mediterranean side. And for many, it was the first time. But Bruce called me early in the morning on Saturday and said that they were looking for rain. And he wondered if we wanted to go over to the Gulf Coast or over, did I say the Mediterranean coast? Yeah, we're not on the Mediterranean coast. The Gulf. If I seem a little tired today, it's only because I am, all right? We are on the Gulf side. So Bruce called and asked, "Do you want to go to the Gulf side or do you want to go to the Atlantic side?" And he said, I think that one would be prettier, but I think we'll have to leave a little earlier. I said, "Well, let's go to the Gulf side and see what happens." And so we did. And the Lord gave us a beautiful day. It was very fun. We found a lot of different souvenirs to bring home with us. One of the things that we discovered as we were looking for sand dollars and different things is that it doesn't take long for what you think you see on the bottom to be gone with the next wave that washes by. And a treasure that was there just one moment was soon lost to our gaze. I wonder sometimes if that isn't true of our hearts. We mean it sincerely when we carve in the sand, "I love you." We mean it sincerely when we write these desires deep on the sands of passing time. And it doesn't take all but a wave or two to wipe away that deep love and fill us with a different distraction, a different love. Wouldn't you like for your loves to be not carved in sand, but carved in stone? That no matter how many washings, no matter how many beatings, no matter how many other things come into life, that it remains etched there in your heart, this
this truth of my passion for that which I ought to have passion for? How can we fix our desires in such a way that they become engraved on our hearts so that the waves of life don't, in fact, erase them? Well, that's what this text answers for us this morning. The proposition this morning is very, very simple. You must make the pursuit of wisdom a permanent fixture on your heart. You can do this. In fact, you're expected to. But that's what this whole text is trying to get at, as a father is trying to convince his son that, son, you need to make this pursuit a passion that will last a lifetime. And remember, we're in the Old Testament, we're in wisdom literature, but as we move through the whole corpus of Scripture, we find that Jesus Christ himself is made wisdom to us. This is nothing less than the pursuit of God himself. We see that in Proverbs, we see that in the New Testament. The pursuit of wisdom is nothing less than the pursuit of God. Therefore, it must be a lifelong pursuit. And it can be, and it should be. There's three responsibilities that we must embrace if we would make our love for wisdom permanent. The first we find in verses 1 through 9. We have to recognize that intellectually, there's a decision that needs to be made. In order to make this love of wisdom, this pursuit of God, a deeply engraved passion on our hearts, we have to recognize that this passion is a choice. So often when we think of loves, we think that we're not in control of what we love. Nothing could be further from the truth, biblically. You love what you love because you choose what you choose. We think it's opposite. We choose what we choose because we love what we love. But biblically, that's not how it works. You love what you love because you choose what you choose. How do I want something that I don't necessarily want? How can I learn to love something I don't necessarily like? Well, that's where the Father is trying to convince the Son. The Son is at a crossroads in life. He's leaving the childhood stage. He's entering into the adult stage. And as he makes this transition, the Father is impressing upon him that he has responsibility for the choices that he makes. And you have to understand that passion isn't just something you fall into. It's something that you choose. And in verses 1 through 4, we must recognize that there is one condition that we all share. We all stand in need of wisdom. This is a general condition. It's a transgenerational condition. This condition is emphasized by the plurality of the address. Look at verse 1. Hear, O, what's the next word? Sons. Okay, look down at verse 10 and then look at verse 20. How is it different from the address in verse 10 and verse 20? Hear, my, plural or singular? Singular. Up in verse 1, it's plural. Down in verse 10 and in verse 20, it's singular. It's different. He's starting out with kind of a general call, not only to his son, but to all sons. Remember, this is a father speaking to his son, but it's also an idealized father speaking to idealized son. The invitation here is open not just for one, but for all. The invitation is to pursue wisdom exclusively, but it's not an exclusive call. This is inclusive of anybody who has ever been born. Guess what? That's all of us. Anybody who has a father, anybody who can wear the title son. Listen, if you've been born, the condition is yours that you need what I have to offer here, is what he's saying. He drives it home just a little more poignantly down in verse 3. He said, when I was a son, I've been where you're at. I've been in this place of need. Let me tell you what happened when I was where you are. My father spoke to me and said, and so what he's doing is he's bringing generations past, uniting them with his own voice and placing this burden of the generation on the shoulders of the son to get him to move the right direction, Longman says. What he's doing is he's calling in the reinforcements and loading up his argument from the very front end and says, listen, you stand as a son. You're not the first one to stand where you stand. I'm speaking to you as a father. I want you to understand that what I'm passing on to you has been passed on to me, has been passed on to him, has been passed on to him. I'm giving you the wisdom of the ages. It's passing on an heirloom. It's giving something of that passing of the baton, if you will. He says, verse 3, when I was a son with my father, and then he kind of increases the language here, end of verse 3, I was tender and the only one or only beloved in the sight of my mother. The idea is that he's evoking emotion with this. My mom thought I was the only one. I was the apple of her eye. She cared about me. She loved me. And because she loved me, she taught me wisdom. Because my dad loved me, he taught me wisdom. He said, I want you to understand the emotion, the pathos that I'm passing this on to you, my son. I'm giving you something that you need. You may not want it. You may not recognize the value of it just yet. But I'm giving you something that's so very valuable. It's been given to me. I don't own it. I'm simply stewarding it. I'm giving it to you, and you become steward of it, and what you do with it, you're responsible for. Because there's another generation waiting after you for the truth that I'm about to pass on to you. In light of our ignorance, we stand in need of teaching. Look at verse 2. I'm giving you good precepts. Do not forsake my teaching. We need somebody to teach us because we don't inherently know all things. Only God does. We know this. This isn't deep, profound truth, and yet it is. Because none of us like being told, do we? We think we got this all figured out. Guys, how many of you honestly read the instructions to anything? I mean, it could be a remote. Okay. Carrie does. I'll vouch for Carrie. He does. Okay. He's more submissive and humble than most of us guys. Okay. But most of us, we really don't like being told what to do, right? There's an extra screw in here. Why? They must have packed too many screws. Right? Or it may be that we missed one where it's really supposed to go. But as the father leans into the son, as he starts to drive home this condition that belongs to him, he says, listen, son, you don't know it all. As much as you think you do, you don't. I want to teach you. I want to help you to understand a world that you don't quite know. The word for teaching here in verse 2 is the word Torah. We're familiar with that. We think Old Testament law. But we need to understand what's packed into this word Torah. The idea is stretching out the finger or the hand to point out a route. It's asking a stranger, hey, which way to? And they say, hey, do you see this road? You see the tree down there? Turn right, go over that hill, and then to the left. It's the idea of showing the way to a place you don't know how to get to on your own. That's the pull, the feel of this word teaching. We stand ignorant, needing somebody to tell us what we don't know. And in light of our error, We stand in need of instruction. Verse 1. He says, hear, O sons, a father's instruction. I reverse the order, but he actually puts this one first. Because when we do listen to the teaching, we almost invariably get it wrong. The idea, instruction here has the idea of discipline, of correction. My son, let me correct your ways. And it's not so much that he has gone wrong so far. He just says, I know you. I know that if I don't give this to you, you will go the wrong way. Left to yourself, you will choose wrong. And so he says, I'm here to help correct. So this is a general transgenerational condition. But when we come to the 21st century, I think it's even more poignant, more potent. Because as we stand here in the 21st century, in light of our visualized culture, we stand desperately in need of valuing words. Look at verse 4. My son, I want you to grab this because my dad gave me this and he taught me. And he said to me, my son, let your heart hold fast my iPad. Let your heart hold fast this picture, this movie. Let your heart hold fast my words. You see, life is going to come past us streaming so quickly. And we're going to be seeing things that we don't even know how to interpret. We need words in order to help us to interpret what we see. One of the delights of being on this trip was on Tuesday night, Mr. Daryl Jinkst, who's a clown, a professional clown, head of the Clown Guild there in the Sebring area. He came over and did some magic tricks. And who did he rope into it? Pun intended. None other than the magnifical manipulator, Matthew Pawlowski. And so he says very, very slowly, okay, I want to see if you guys can follow instructions. And he takes just a simple piece of rope, wraps it around his hand, and starts tying it in this knot. And he says, okay, now flop it over your hands, and you should have a knot. And Matthew did the exact same thing as Mr. Jinkst, and Mr. Jinkst has the knot, and Matthew does not. And so Matthew did it how many times? 5? 18? It was something like that, okay? And then passed the rope to somebody else. We went through every single member on the team. He did it slow. He did it fast. He did it high. He did it low. He did it, you know, like Sam I Am, right? He did it in every possible way. And we were watching him the whole time. And we could not figure out until he told us, all right, as you drop the rope off, let go of the rope with your right hand and grab it in a different place. And all of a sudden, voila, you have a knot. The son needs words. Because life is happening so quickly, he doesn't even know what he's seeing. He doesn't even know what to look for. My friend, we value the visual, but we must train our hearts to value the word. Oh, it's so much easier to just plug in something and watch it. But he says, you've got to invest the time to listen, to read, and to allow the word to make an impact on you. We need these words because we stand in need. In light of our information culture in the 21st century, we stand in need of precepts. Up there in verse 2, for I give you good precepts. The King James has, I give you good doctrine. New American Standard says, I give you good teaching. NIV says, I give you good learning. The idea is, I'm giving you something of a long-standing, professionally certified body of learning. I'm giving you something that through the ages has been passed down, not only as tradition, but as certifiable truth. You need to know. You ever go on the internet and you find a really good blog and it says, you should do this for your problem. You look at the next blog and it says, whatever you do, be sure you don't do what the last blog just told you what to do, right? It's like, oh, great. I know nothing, and I've got two self-proclaimed experts who are telling me to do something and not to do something. Which do I listen to? Well, how do you figure it out? Well, I've got 9 that said do and 4 that said don't. So I'm going to go with the, because I have no idea, right? And you really don't know who's telling you the truth. What he's saying as a father is, listen, I'm giving you something that you don't have to question. It's not just because it's me giving it to you. It's because it is what it is. It doesn't matter who gives it to you. But I, as a father who loves you, and I don't want to pull the wool over your eyes, I'm giving you a certifiable knowledge base of truth. You can take this to the bank. You can cash in on this. We need this more than ever in our 21st century because we have so many self-proclaimed experts. We have an information glut. How do we discern? The only way we can is by going to the Word. In light of our autonomous culture, we stand in need of the commandments that he speaks of there in verse 4. Keep my commandments and live. When we think of commandments, we think of somebody being in control, somebody putting on their bossy hat and saying, "You must obey," right? But it's like a dad telling his son, "Son, don't go out in the street." "Oh, Dad, you just don't like me playing with roadkill." No, it's that I don't want you to be roadkill, right? The idea behind the commandments is, listen, I'm doing this for your own protection. I'm doing this because I value you. And we as an autonomous culture, valuing our independence and autonomy and our rights, need our toes stepped on. We need to listen that we're not the final authority. This isn't a matter of small significance or of personal preference. This is a matter of life and death. Verse 1, he says, "Hear, O my son, father's instruction. Be attentive so that you may gain insight." Well, that's a pretty important thing. To live life without insight is to live light in the dark, to not know where you're going, to not know what you're seeing. But it doesn't stop there. Verse 4, he taught me these things and said to me, "Let your heart hold fast my words. Keep my commandments so you can do what?" So you can live. You understand that if you play in the street long enough without knowing what you're looking for, without knowing what you're listening to, you will end up dead. Okay? It's not that you can't do it for some time, but you can't do it long and live. He says, you will not succeed at the game of life in any meaningful way if you reject the pursuit of God and the pursuit of his wisdom. There's just no way. He says in verse 4, I want you to live, and the idea is living life to its fullest. The idea is the abundant life that Jesus Christ speaks of. It's life as it's designed to be lived. It's a life that looks like the life of Christ. It's the life that you weren't just designed for, but that you are being conformed to. The only way you find out what that life looks like is by getting in this book. It's certifiable. It's changed generations. And it's made them stand like men. In verses 5 through 8, we have to recognize there's only two choices. There's one condition we stand in need. There's two choices. You either get wisdom or you don't. Verse 5, get wisdom. Get insight. And then he gives a list of three negative responses and a list of three positive responses. Negatively, he says, don't forget it. Don't turn away from it. Don't forsake it. The idea of forgetting is it's counting her unworthy of the effort. Listen, it's going to cost you in order to get into this book. You're going to have to turn something off in order to get your nose in this book. You're going to have to not do something so you can do this. He says, my son, don't forget her. Count her worthy of the effort. He says, don't turn away. Don't get lost. Don't get distracted. Don't lose interest. Don't be sidetracked is the idea. And then he says, don't forsake her. Don't leave her abandoned. Don't desert her. She's your life. She's your card to the future. She's your way to success. Don't leave her sitting on the roadside as you drive away. Negative responses, and then he gives three positive responses. Instead, verse 6, love her. Love her. Verse 8, prize her. End of verse 8, embrace her. Again, speaking, personifying wisdom as a beautiful woman. He says, I want you to give her your heart. Make her the exclusive object of your affections. Prize her. I want you to esteem her more highly than others, that vow and vie for your affections. Give her your attention, and give her your attention exclusively. Value her, cherish her, embrace her. Take her, hold her, hug her, make her your own. Bring her into your own private space. Have your own private conversations that are yours and hers alone. That's what I want you to do with wisdom, he says. But the Father presents it in kind of a either you do it or you don't fashion. There's only two choices when it comes to wisdom. You either get it or you don't. And because of this choice, because it's either or, to be indecisive is to choose against wisdom. Well, I don't know if I should. I don't know if I should get in this book. I don't know if I'm ready to take that jump. If I don't take the jump to get into the book, I stay out of the book. I've already made the choice. And so he says, son, you've got to make the choice to do this in the positive way. There's one condition, we're needy. There's two choices. Either you do it or you don't. But there's three benefits to getting wisdom in verses 6, 8, and 9. He says in verse 6, don't forsake her. And if you don't forsake her, she will keep you. Verse 6, love her and she will guard you. He gives a picture. It's a watchful guard. And the point is that this wisdom will protect you from all that seeks to abuse you, all that seeks to corrupt you, all that seeks to make you a laughingstock in life. Pursue wisdom, you won't have to worry about it. He says a little bit later down in verse 8, she will honor you if you embrace her. The idea behind honor is, what's it say? She will, look at verse 9 because it kind of explains. Verse 8, prize her highly, she will exalt you. She will honor you if you embrace her. She'll place on your head a graceful garland. She'll bestow on you a beautiful crown. Honoring and exalting are very, very similar, but there's a little bit of distinction between them. Verse 9, it seems like he talks about the honor going with the graceful garland, the victor's wreath, if you will. What happens when somebody is honored is they're brought out publicly and they're recognized for winning a prize well sought. They've fought lawfully. They've run legally. And they've obtained that which they pursued. And there's that moment where you put that victor's crown on their head and you say, congratulations, look, this is what success looks like. They made it and they did well. He says, son, if you want to stand out among the sons of men, this is the way that when it's all said and done, others will look at you and say, that's what I want to be when I grow up. She'll honor you in that way. The other thing is she will exalt you. She'll put a beautiful crown on your head because you prize her. That is, she'll give you a position from which you can exercise virtuous influence and benevolent strength so that you can exercise your authority from God. You can steward it by having right conversations in moving others on the path of life so that you can use the resources that God's entrusted you to meet the needs of others and build into their lives and strengthen their hands to do right. You want a position in life of influence? Then seek wisdom, who will teach you how to use your influence the right way. There's a decision that must be made. Second, there's a path that must be walked. We see in verses 10 through 13. Like anything in life, wisdom, or maybe we should say our desires, grow with practice. Caressa got on her cello and was working toward this offertory this morning. And we've been gone for a little bit. She didn't have a cello down in Florida. She grabbed it and said, oh, I can tell I've not done this for a little bit. Okay. What we need to know about our hearts is that our hearts learn to love. We love what we love because we choose what we choose. Okay. But our hearts stay in love by practicing that love. And so as we work at loving wisdom, you'll find that if you don't practice wisdom for a time, you won't love wisdom the way you used to love wisdom. If you don't stay in this word, you won't love this word the way you used to love this word. It takes practice. The decision that one makes results in one of only two paths. There's not three. There's not four. I like the way Ray Ortland writes. He says, in our hobbit-like timidity, we prefer a compromise. We might prefer three ways to choose from. Maybe a rotten life of folly over at one extreme, a super-duper life of wisdom at the other, and then in the middle, we could maybe settle for a half-decent life of mediocrity that we don't mind settling for. But God says there's only two choices. And if you don't choose wisdom, you do choose folly. That's the only way that it works. First, he gives us the good path in verses 10 through 13. Hear, my son, accept my words so that the years of your life may be many. Verse 10, we see this as an individual path. Son, I'm not talking about somebody else's life. I'm talking about your life. You're responsible for your life. Don't you love blaming somebody else? You're a jerk. Yeah, but you should see the person that made me this way. He says, son, I'm talking about you. This is your life that we're talking about. You only get one. The choices that you make, they're significant. This is an individual path, and it's a consequential path. You can live your life in such a way that you will be blessed for many years. But it depends on the choices you make. In verse 11, this is an exclusive path. I've taught you the way of wisdom. There's only one way. Pursuing wisdom means pursuing God. Pursuing God means pursuing wisdom. If you go that way, you will find life. What did Jesus say? I am the way, the truth, the life. Jesus confirms it in the New Testament. It's an exclusive way. But in verse 11, it's also a varied path. I've taught you the way of wisdom. I've led you in the paths of righteousness. We went to a state park when we were down in Florida, and it was rather large. We were tooling around inside of it looking for the right path, and there were like seven to choose from, and we went on four or five of the different paths for the time that allowed us, and each one was different. One we walked through kind of foresty, everything was green, but one was like palm trees and pine trees. One was a swamp, a cypress swamp. Another was kind of a fern bed garden. If we'd had time, we could have walked through an orange grove. All these different paths were part of one state park, but each path had its own uniqueness to it. I sometimes think, if I walk this, all I get to wear is white shirts and ties. I don't even like ties. Okay? I think if I'm going to follow God, then I have to. It looks so starched. It looks so narrow. He said, you don't understand. My son, when you come into walking life this way, it will bring you down many paths of uprightness, and each one will be more glorious than the one before it. You're going to learn what it looks like to walk as a faithful husband, to say no to you and yes to your wife. You're going to learn what it looks like to be a faithful dad. You're going to know what it looks like to be employed and to be a faithful employer or a faithful employee. You're going to learn what it means to be good and involved in this different way, in this different relationship. There's so many different aspects to living life right. It touches everything. It touches everything. And it gives new life to everything you do. In verse 12, he says, this is an easy path, son. When you walk, your steps will be unhampered. When you run, your paths will be unstumbled. You can make progress down this path. It's an easy path. It's a good path. Verse 13, it's a safe path. She will guard you. or guard her because she is your life. She'll usher you into this life. Therefore, keep hold of her. Don't let her go. Guard her. That's the good path. But in verses 14 through 17, we have the bad path. In verse 14, it's a forbidden path. Don't go there. A big X marking the spot. It's an immoral path. It's the path of the wicked, the path of evil. It's a dangerous path in verse 15. Avoid it. Turn away from it. Pass on. In verse 16, it's a restless path. My son, if you walk the path of evil, you must understand that they are robbed of sleep unless they've made someone else to stumble. In verse 17, it's an addictive path. They eat the bread. It says in verse 17, they eat the bread of wickedness. They drink the wine of violence. Bread is just a matter of maintenance. Wine is a matter of pleasure. So what they start out doing just to get by, fitting in with others, they end up taking a delight in, and they can't get away from it. Garrett says, they do not commit crimes in order to live. They live in order to commit crimes. In verse 17, it's a destructive path. It's destructive to self. It makes them wicked, and it's destructive to others. It brings them violence. But what I want us to see is that both paths do have an ultimate destination. There in verse 18, he says, I want you to understand, son, the path of the righteous is like the light of dawn. It grows brighter and brighter until full day. It begins as a dawning, a crack, just the beginning of light. I stepped out my door at 5:30 this morning to walk over here, and the moon was still up. It was still dark. You could still see a couple stars, but the sun was coming up. There was this air of expectancy. And that's just where it starts. It increases in brightness. It grows more and more until it leads to a fullness of daylight, a fullness of splendor. On the other hand, the way of the wicked isn't the splendor of noonday. It's the terror of darkness. It begins as deep darkness. It ends with them stumbling further. But here's what I want us to see, what the author wants us to see. Unlike the path of the righteous that grows more and more in its expectant of goodness, what happens with the wicked way is they're going along in their deep darkness, and there's no growth. There's just sudden, unexpected failure, and they don't know how it happened. Where did that come from? Unexpected, sudden failure. There's three responsibilities we must embrace to make love of wisdom permanent in our lives. First, we need to understand there's a decision to be made. Then we need to understand there's a path that must be walked. And third, we need to understand that our hearts must be tended. And so he says down in verse 20 through verse 27, you have to learn to love wisdom. There's no 5 easy step program to develop wisdom in your life. Instead, wisdom is the slow commandeering of your whole life by God's Spirit, so that you're working to overcome everything that stands in the way internally. You're working against everything that's working against you externally to accomplish God's will for your life. The effects of this wisdom are holistic. It affects the entire body. Look at verse 22. These words, wisdom, it's life to those who find them, and it's healing to all their flesh. Flesh, body, however your translation has it translated there. But the goal of the words is to bring a redemptive benefit, to bring healing. Something's broken. Something needs fixed. Guess what? This can fix it. Something doesn't work. Guess what? This will make it work again. Not immediately, but with time. If you really put yourself under this, this will make it work again. The goal of his words is redemptive. And the goal of his words is to bring, can I say, immediate benefit? In that it happens here, in this life. He's not talking about a glorified flesh, a glorified body. He's talking about the life in which you live, the broken body that you reside in right now. If you make this your life, it will give life to the body in which you reside. In fact, it will bring complete benefit. It will make every part of you living in the realm of eternity. The process is at one level an outside-in process. So in verses 20 through 21, we see him talking about the ears, the eyes, working from the outside in to the heart. The ear being the gatekeeper of what enters audibly, the eyes being the gatekeeper of what enters visually. And in all of these things, there's the fact that the responsibility for what gets in lies with the Son. But he brings it down to the heart. The heart determines what's done with what enters through the eyes, what enters through the ears. And he says, I want you to keep them in your heart. At one level, it's an outside-in process, but at another level, it's an inside-out process. Verse 23. Not only keep them in your heart, but my son, keep your heart. There's a command. Keep your heart with all vigilance. It's emphasized by a threefold admonition. Keep it. Guard it. Value. Don't lose sight. Don't get distracted. Keep it with vigilance. The word has the idea of extreme care or watchfulness. The word itself speaks of a prison, of being a watch guard in a place of holding, so that all the time you're watching, you're expecting, trying, anticipating where it's going to get loose and get away. And then he uses one more word. He says, keep with vigilance, but keep your heart with all vigilance. The idea is, son, I want you to stand as the guard of your heart, looking in all directions, at all times, using all methods to ensure that wisdom gets in and stays in. This is a full-time, 24/7 job. Again, there's a good reminder. Ray Ortland writes, we do not have to give ourselves to raw evil to end up there. We only have to unguard our hearts. We only have to stop being vigilant. You understand? You're just a choice away from choosing wrong. You're just a choice away from choosing folly. And when we choose folly, when we choose evil, it's just that much easier to choose the next evil and the next. He says, you have to guard your heart. The command is this, but the reason is because, end of the verse, because from it flows the springs of all of your life. The picture is a mountain spring. It trickles down every side of the mountain. The heart is a spring, and out of that spring of the heart, every decision that you make in life resides right here. What do I do with my hand comes from my heart. What I do with my eyes comes from my heart. Where I place my feet comes from my heart. And as he impresses his son, he's basically saying what Romans 12 verse 1 says, present your entire body a living sacrifice, but that presentation comes first in your heart. It's like the little kid's song, oh, be careful, little eyes, what you see. Oh, be careful, little hands, what you do. Oh, be careful, little mouth, what you say. Oh, be careful, little feet, where you go. Well, what determines my hands, my feet, my eyes? It's my heart. And so, going out from that, verse 24, if you guard your heart, then you'll put away crooked speech. You'll put away devious speech, that which removes you from the way and brings you to an undesired end. Put it away from you. Put it far from you. Let your heart determine to guard what comes out your mouth. Verse 25, let your eyes look directly forward. Let your gaze be straight. The idea is emphasizing looking toward the goal. What direction are you going? Put blinders on. Don't get distracted. Keep your eye on the prize and chase it with all you have. Let your heart determine to clarify your life's objective. Because We tend to wander where we look. Steve does shooting. He's done professional shooting in the past. And as he places his sights, he has to keep his eye on the target. Because you tend to shoot where you look. You tend to walk where you look. You tend to deviate wherever you turn your head. Verses 26 and 27, he focuses on the feet. There's a focus here, he says in verse 26, ponder the path of your feet. That word ponder is really a deep and interesting word. It means to dig through, to tear open, to weigh out. It's to test something for level. We were working up at Longview, and we had a level that Dan was working on a wall, and Larry goes in and checks Dan's wall, and he says, "Guys, you didn't get this straight." Dan said, "Turn the level over." He did. He said, "Oh, you got it straight. You got it wrong the other way." We ended up testing the level, and the level was bad. But the idea is, listen, put whatever instrument you can to understand, what are you doing with your life? Where are your feet taking you? What path are you walking down? Don't swerve. Don't turn away. Especially, don't turn your feet to evil. In fact, turn your feet away from evil as you keep your eyes on the prize. Proverbs 4 drives home that we must make the pursuit of wisdom a permanent fixture of our hearts. But the question this morning is this: what desires are you engraving repeatedly on your heart? What desires are you repeatedly engraving on your heart? Because you love what you love because you choose what you choose. For some of you, the desires that you're engraving on your heart is your health. And repeatedly, your health becomes the greatest desire. For some, it's security. For some, it's acceptance. For some, it's success. For some, it's recognition, or rest, or friends, or wealth. What is it that you're training your heart to love? My friend, you must train your heart to pursue above anything else the life of Christ, empowered by the Spirit, which will exalt you to positions of influence, of leadership, which will publicly display you as a life worth living to the glory of God. Is that where you're at today? I trust it is. If it's not, why don't you make the adjustment? Stop pursuing what you shouldn't. Start pursuing what you should. Let's pray.